Hello, welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kaveh Tafoyi. Why is there such a rush to overthrow Syria's President Bashar al-Assad? The United States, Israel, and some Arab states, as well as al-Qaeda, are seeking to overthrow him. Yet with Israel, talks, dialogue, diplomacy for decades now, which has not resulted in any positive outcomes on the Palestinian issue. Well, in this news analysis, we will analyze why many countries, both Western and Arab, are so keen on pushing Assad out of power, even saying any replacement is better than Assad.
The United Nations General Assembly has adopted a resolution condemning Syria over what it called the government's crackdown on opposition protests. Backed by the US and Britain, the resolution was drafted by the Arab League. Earlier this month, the Arab organization also pushed for a Western-backed UN Security Council resolution which called for Syrian President Bashar al-Assad to resign. The resolution was vetoed by Russia and China. The Arab League has also called on the Security Council to send troops to Syria. It has decided to cut all diplomatic ties with Damascus and offered political and financial support to the opposition. The Arab League and the US-led Western countries claimed that regime change would put an end to the ongoing unrest in Syria. Meanwhile, reports suggest that weapons are being sent to Syria by Arab countries that have close links to the US. Suspicion grew further over the real motive on the Syrian situation when the leader of the terrorist Al-Qaeda organization, Ayman al-Zawahiri, echoed a similar call for the fall of the Syrian president. The Secretary General of the Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah, has accused them of making an alliance to overthrow Assad.
America and Europe and Israel and the so-called Arab moderate countries who take responsibility of all the catastrophes in Palestine and in Iraq, in Iran and the people of the region over the past decades. Isn't it strange? And Al-Qaeda as well, for all them to come together, they insist on accomplishing one goal, to overthrow the regime in Syria.
Nasrallah said the reason behind efforts to overthrow the Syrian government is that Damascus does not accept the US and Israeli conditions. It's also because Assad's government supports resistance against Israel and its allies. Nasrallah accused Lebanon's March the 14th alliance of instigating violence in Syria. The Hezbollah leader also criticized some Arab governments for rejecting talks with Damascus on the grounds that time is running out to deal with the situation. This while they have been advocating dialogue with Israel over the past decades. The double standards adopted by certain Arab states in the West are highlighted when it comes to Bahrain, a country which hosts the US 5th Naval Fleet. They remain silent on Bahraini regime's deadly crackdown against the opposition. The call for supporting democracy in Syria comes by Arab countries who have bleak human rights record. At the same time, troops from these countries, including Saudi Arabia, are in Bahrain to help crush opposition protests. The United States, a self-proclaimed defender of human rights, has also been supplying the Bahraini regime with weapons used during the crackdown of pro-democracy protests.
So many different dynamics behind the situation in Syria. Let's see if we can get some answers. Let me introduce our guest, member of the Syrian Social Club, Omar Waqaf, joins us from London. We have editor of Al Akhbar Weekly, Omar Nashabi, joining us from Beirut. Gentlemen, welcome. Mr. Omar Waqaf, first to you. Your UK-based group supports the reforms inside Syria. Do you want these reforms to be carried out by Syrians themselves or by the intervention of foreign countries like the United States, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, or Qatar?
Well, basically what we have advocated for since the start of the issues and problems in Syria was that we know that if regional and Western powers get their nose into this, it's going to be very costly for Syrians. We have certain belief in the capability of President Assad. He's still a young person. We know that he tried very much to change the regime. We know that the regime isn't that easy to change. So we feared from the very beginning that going hard and saying, well, let's just topple the regime is going to cost a lot. And it has so far. And we are in a position now where we fear even a bigger loss should, you know, the Western powers carry out their threats with military means and so on.
That is a worrying sign of this. But let me come to you, Omar Nashabi, and just curious, why is there such an urgency when it comes to Bashar al-Assad for him to be removed? I mean, they've come out and said they, Western countries, some moderate Arab countries, any alternative, including Israel, any alternative in Syria is better than Bashar al-Assad. What is the sense of urgency here?
Yes, definitely. The target is not President Bashar al-Assad. The target is a stable Syria and a capable Syria, a Syria that has the enough power to support the resistance movements in the region, to support Hezbollah, to support Hamas, to support the Islamic Jihad, to support the resistance movements against occupation in Iraq, to support all movements of liberation in the Arab world, and at the same time keep a stable Syria and keep good relations in the Arab region and in the world, and act on a high diplomatic level. And that's exactly what Bashar al-Assad tried to do in Syria. And he started doing the reforms long before these troubles started in Syria. This was his inauguration speech, in fact. In his inauguration speech, he talked about reform. But reform in Syria takes time. This is a difficult regime. It's a difficult system. You know, it has gone through a lot of trouble in the past, a lot of wars, a lot of tension from abroad, a lot of occupation. And I think that it's not easy to do reform, and especially democratic reform that is solid and truthful, not just in form and in shape, but in content. It's not easy to do that. And also, Syria keeps good relations with Iran, and that is something that would be totally unacceptable for the West, because the West is now targeting Iran and therefore wants to isolate Iran. And what President Assad was doing all along was to keep good relations with Iran, and that's something that they could not actually agree on. And in one more element, there is the element that has to do with an attempt on the Turkish side to actually negotiate with the Syrians during the I think 2007, 2008. There was an attempt to open negotiations with Israel, indirect negotiations through Turkey. And there were some demands from Bashar al-Assad, and there was an offer, and Bashar al-Assad thought that this offer was unjust and that it did not provide the rights for the Syrians, and it did not guarantee the return of the occupied Golan Heights to the Syrian motherland, and therefore it was not accepted.
Well, let's listen to what Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah has said, which is quite interesting in terms of Syria. Let's take a listen to that.
They insist on military confrontation. They insist on rejecting dialogue. They insist on overthrowing the regime. What is the logic here? Let's put America, Israel, and the West aside. These Arab governments, they say, what's the solution? With Israel, the Arab governments respond and they say, a political solution. There is no other choice but negotiations and dialogue with Israel. Is there a time ceiling, a time frame? No. For how long have they been negotiating? Tens of years with the Israelis who occupy, the killers, the Israeli killers, but they're patient with the Israelis. And they say there is a Arab peace initiative, which was made after 2000. Now we're in 2012. This peace initiative is still on the table. But go ahead for a political solution in Syria. They say we don't have time. It's too late.
Samar Awagaf, Israel equals patience. Assad has to go. Can you explain that to us?
Well, basically, Arabs fear, or certain Arab countries have an issue with Iran more than they have an issue apparently with Israel. That's pretty much obvious, isn't it? For the past few decades, really, I mean, we've seen the likes of the Gulf states, for example, make Iran more of an enemy than they make of Israel. They say, well, for example, Israel is never going to change. I mean, their logic is Israel is never going to change our way of living. They're not going to affect our oil production and so on and so forth. But with Iran, they feel that there is some sort of a hidden battle for supremacy over the Gulf. And I believe they're wrong. I think this state of animosity between the Gulf states and Iran is fabricated by somebody who wants to divide and rule, who wants to control the oil resources in the Gulf. So that's why, with regards to Syria now, they are fighting Syria and they want the current Syrian government to be toppled, not because of the prosperity of the Syrian population, but because they want to weaken a certain alliance in the region between Iran and Syria and the other resisting movements against Israel, basically. And that's why they think that President Assad should now resign, because they believe that this is going to solve all the problems. No, I don't think so. It's probably going to complicate matters a lot more than they are already complicated. And if they believe that the issue here, the key point here, is that they link between President Assad's resignation, stepping down or handing over authority to his vice president, and the cessation of violence in Syria. Now, this has two theories. A, they're either going to stop funding and arming the armed groups in Syria and say, well, okay, we've achieved our objective, calm down now. And I don't think those people will listen, because they are now considered by law some outlaws, and they will be reprimanded somehow by the Syrian government, whoever the top of the Syrian government is. And the second issue is that it would be very clear to them that, or to us, that their main objective from the very start, really, was to topple the government of President Assad, rather than, as they claim, intervene for the benefit and welfare of the Syrian people. What they don't know, and I think, well, I think they actually know, but they would not confess to, a violent toppling of the regime of the central government in Syria would lead to multiple deaths, to what we have seen so far, even quadruple, because it could stir a conflict that could only end with the disintegration of the country into multiple countries, really. I don't think that there are a lot of people in Syria who believe that the Gulf State Initiative is very much focused on the welfare of the Syrian people. We know that they have their own interests to care for. We don't have a problem with that. I mean, we are happy to help them with their interests and play ball with them, as we have done so far for the past few decades, really. But, you know, to intervene in our country like this and, you know, take us backwards decades in terms of national unity, in terms of economy, that has been so hard to take, really.
Right. And when you talk about those interests that they may have, maybe it's the interest that lies in terms of their own existence, in a sense. Omar Nashabi, the reforms that are implemented by Bashar al-Assad are much more far-reaching than what countries like Saudi Arabia or Qatar and UAE have had in their countries.
Yeah, that's the irony. I mean, when someone from Bahrain calls for a cease of the bloodshed or whatever was used, whatever terms were used in his statement, it is absolutely ironic, because nothing has been done in Syria. In fact, in Bahrain, on the contrary, the government of Bahrain asked and the king of Bahrain asked the Saudis for help in order to crush the civilians who are not using weapons. And that's and on a previous show on this channel, we discussed the issue of comparison between Bahrain and Syria, and there are so many differences that the situation cannot be compared. As for Saudi Arabia, you know, the crushing of the civilian uprising, calling for basic rights, has been going on for years now. Although there's no media, there's no YouTube, there's no leaking of information. At least, you know, some information that is credible that we could use in the media. That does not exist. President Assad presented reforms for the constitution, amendments to the constitution. There are elections on these amendments on the 26th. This is a huge step forward. I think if there is a goodwill on the part of some of the Syrians who are on the streets, the civilians who are not carrying weapons, I think their interest if they would think about the higher interests of Syria, would be to go to the table of dialogue, to participate in the referendum for the new constitution, to discuss with the Assad regime, to discuss how one can preserve the institutions in Syria. Syria is a country that has institutions that provide basic services to its citizens, unlike, for example, Lebanon, where the situation is so chaotic and we have problems with rebuilding the country after the long civil war. In Syria, you have educational institutions that are offering basic services to the population. You have medical services that are cheaper than Lebanon and that are available for the whole population. You have internet, phone, you have electricity in the different areas. You have agricultural reform. You have police, traffic police. I mean, basic services to the people. Why should any Syrian destroy what they have, when they have seen the example in Lebanon and in Iraq that in war, in destruction, in occupation, everything will go away. The basic services will not be there for the regular people. So I'm sure, and I second your guest from London on his position regarding preserving Syrian institutions, going through with the reforms that the President Assad suggested. If there are more demands, I am sure President Assad is ready to listen. President Assad, in fact, is not holding on to power, or else he wouldn't have amended the constitution. He's saying that the constitution, the president can only rule for 7 years, only to be extended one time. He allowed freedom of expression. He removed the one-party rule system. These are all serious reforms, and if one wants to test them, one has to test it. If people believe that President Assad is not serious, let them test him. Let's give this man a chance. I think by all levels, and we're talking to ordinary Syrians who do not carry weapons. Others, as your guest said from London, those who are carrying weapons, these are terrorist groups that work for the interest. These are mercenaries. One cannot have dialogue with the mercenaries. These are not people who have principles, and they do not care about their country. As from the destruction that we've seen in the past months, we have seen that these people do not have any attachment to their national identity.
Amar Wakhaf, just listening to Amar Nashabi, just the line of thought that he introduced, the number of times he mentioned the Syrian people, and of course him saying, why don't we let a chance to be given to Assad? The real question should be what's in the hearts and minds of Syrians, don't you think? Something that doesn't seem to be in the rhetoric of for example, the U.S., its allies, and some of the moderate Arab countries. I mean, the latest poll indicated 70% want Assad to stay. And this is higher than before the demonstrations that began a year ago.
Yes, indeed. The main concern of Syrians is, or the majority of Syrians, basically, is that they do not want, or we do not want, the central government to fall. Of those 70%, if this is a true figure, or a true percentage, you have the diehard supporters, obviously, who form a part of that. But the other proportion is formed from people who may not agree, basically, with the policies of the government, some of them might not even like President Assad. But everyone has the same objective. The central government must not fall. And this is the objective of the, basically, Western powers and the regional powers. They want their own puppet government in Damascus. And Syrians will basically not accept a government that is decided in Doha or in Riyadh or in Ankara or even in Washington, for that matter. Syrians have very clear sense of their independence, and they're very much proud of that. And I can give you examples over examples. So what Syrians really are up to is that, yes, we know that this government could do a lot better than it is doing at the moment, but we do not want somebody else to come and tell us exactly what we do, because that would be a precedent, and if we open that door, it will never be closed again in the near future.
Let me introduce Webster Griffin Tarpley from Washington. He's the author and historian, joins us on the phone to get him in on this discussion. Webster Tarpley, what is the rush? Why is it that there's such a push for Assad to go and not give a chance for reforms as he has promised, which includes revision of the Constitution and, of course, elections to be held after that?
Part of it is a hysteria here in Washington. There's a kind of a prevalent psychosis that if you don't ride the color revolutions and the people power coups and the destabilizations as far as you can and as fast as you can, then that process will come to an end, and you won't have accomplished your goal. But remember, the idea here is Zbigniew Brzezinski's theory of microstates and mini-states. It's to break up existing countries, to have warlords, to have secession, to have failed states, rump states, the kind of thing we see in Libya, which seems to be descending into chaos. That may be the best example. And Syria, of course, is a key part of a bloc that reaches from Hezbollah to Syria to Iraq, to Iran, and over to Pakistan. That would all be sort of anti-imperialist territory. If Syria could be taken out, then that would break it up. I would point to one very important thing. The beginning of this week, we have Zawahiri, the likely MI6 double agent who runs al-Qaeda, calling on all the fighters in Turkey, Iraq, Jordan, Lebanon, and everywhere else to come into Syria and wage war against Assad. And we had the U.S. intelligence czar, James Clapper, yesterday in the Congress, acknowledging that al-Qaeda, these terrorists, these killers, are an integral part of the Syrian opposition. And nevertheless, the U.S. pushed through that resolution saying that the Syrian army and the Syrian police, the lawfully constituted forces of that government, they have to pull out of cities like Homs, and they have to turn that over to these foreign fighters, renegades, deserters, and al-Qaeda. So basically they're saying Homs is better off under al-Qaeda than it is under Assad. Now that's just an obscene monstrosity. It shows you how degraded these imperialists have become as they attempt to pursue this process of destabilization.
Omar Nashmi, that sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? Breaking up a country. The issue came up with Iraq, Vice President Biden. We can't forget that. Still on the table, it seems like. What do you think? What consequences would this have, the push by the United States in particular on this issue?
I think that it's not a coincidence that the trouble in Syria started as the Americans were withdrawing their last troops from Iraq. They wanted to create chaos in the region as they withdraw from Iraq, as their campaign in Iraq, as their ambitions in Iraq to actually occupy it and control it fully failed. They wanted to create a disruption in the whole region. In addition to that, what backed them up is also the fact that Syria supported Hezbollah, and Hezbollah poses a serious threat to Israel. And that is something that cannot be accepted by the American administration or any administration in the past, except perhaps one or two administrations that I can think of, but who are not fully supportive, but they were supportive to a certain extent. This created the incentives. The Turks had also incentives because they felt that their control over the region was diminishing, and they had already trouble with the Europeans.
Okay, I'm sorry I got to jump in here, Omar Nashmi. We ran out of time. I apologize. Editor at Al-Akhbar Weekly, thank you, Omar Nashmi. Author and historian Webster Tarpley from Washington, thank you. And member of the Syrian Social Club, Amer Waqaf, thank you so much from London. Thank you, the viewer. For watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis, any questions or comments, newsroom@presstv.ir is our email address. From Mika Vatafai and the entire team is goodbye.